from the Honolulu Police Department. Somebody had to do it, I'm sorry. That's where I'm from. Worked in three different agencies, two in Hawaii and one in Massachusetts. Before I got out of security, I got out of security and did some other stuff. And I got in the pizza business, of all things, a number of years ago. Spent a number of years in the pizza business, and that's what brought me to Louisville. I was the first safety and security director with Papa John's about 24 years ago. So been here in Louisville for about that long. After 4 years as a director of safety and security at Papa John's, I was asked to be part of the first team to be a safety and security team member at Southeast Christian Church. They didn't have one. They were a large church at the time. So that we formed an ad hoc committee. The elders approved that, and we just volunteered. Somewhere along the line, we felt that the church needed to hire somebody. So I was part of the guys that wrote the job description, turned it in. The elders approved it. One night, I'm driving Bob Russell, who used to be our senior pastor, back from a speaking engagement. He looked at me and says, "Ron, we'd like you to take the job." I told him, "Bob, leave me alone. I'm really happy at Papa John's." Then he said something that you fear when pastors talk to you. He said, "I'm going to pray about that." So 30 days later, I lost my job at Papa John's. So anyways, after a while, kicking and screaming, I went to the church and took the job. I told them I'd give them one, maybe 5 years. I ended up being 19.
Oh, wow.
So, just retired last June and formed this company now to help churches, primarily in private schools and parachurch organizations in safety and security. My background is varied, so I can do both a lot of stuff, including active shooter training in businesses, which I've done. Well, let's get started. We don't have a lot of time. I've got enough slides to run us through, but if you have questions as we go along, please ask, and hopefully I'll be able to help you with that. Let's talk about safety, and we're going to talk some things before we get to what everybody wants to hear is the active shooter. That better? Okay. We're going to talk about some fire safety issues, some other issues such as medical, and then we'll get to the active shooter toward the end. That's where everybody wants to go. Church fires, there are about 1,800 church fires a year causing $40 million in damage. That's a really big deal to insurance companies, so they really want us to start thinking about that. And something to tell you about the insurance companies, I've dealt with many of them, and some large and some small companies. Every time you go to one of these seminars, every time you take information back to your church and implement any programs, make sure you tell your insurance agent or broker. Because you're reducing the risk at your church when you implement programs. They like that. They'll tell the underwriters. And lo and behold, sometimes the underwriters will reduce your premiums because you've lowered the risk to the church. So don't be afraid to tell them what you're doing. Over half of church fires are caused by arson. So many churches have alarms, security alarms and things, and hopefully that helps, but half of the church fires. Some fire prevention stuff. Post the fire escape route. Anytime you have a room that seats more than 50, by law, you got to have one of those maps that you see in some large buildings. Your fire extinguishers. I was at a facility at a private school a couple of days ago doing an assessment for them, and we're going to do some active shooter training. And I walked through their facility, and they've got fire extinguishers hanging, which are really nice, but they've never been inspected monthly. And you can have somebody come by, a volunteer or whoever, just sign off on them, make sure that the arrow's in the green. That's important. Every year, they get inspected by a company. Every 6 years, they get redone by the company. That needs to be done. Ask the fire marshal what is the policy on set builds. If you're building a set for an Easter program, a Christmas program, ask your fire marshal before you start doing that. A lot of times, he'll want fireproof lumber, and they make it's a little pinkish. Or you can build a set and spray it, or in the paint, put fire retardant. Fire marshals like that stuff. By the way, I went through 5 fire marshals while I was at Southeast. They're all my buddies, because I don't want them to be my enemies. They can be your best friend or your enemy, and if you're there, your best friend, they will help you if you have problems or questions. They're great people to get on your side. conduct some fire drills. I'm not saying wholeheartedly sanctuary fire drills. I'm kind of focusing on the children. I would like to see a fire drill in the children's area about every 6 months. Do it in good weather, of course. At least gather the children, walk out, gather in place, bring them back in, so the people that work in the children's area really understand that. Ask the fire marshal what his policy on candles. Some fire marshals don't like any candles except for weddings. And if you use candles for weddings, buy the non-drip ones. They make them. We had a photographer fall over a ring bearer during a ceremony, and he knocked the candelabra down, and it just missed the bride. So that would have been tragic. So the next day, I bought a small fire extinguisher and hit it up where they do weddings behind a flower pot, just in case. Candles. Some fire marshals will allow candles in rooms and offices. Usually just one candle in a room. They don't like candles at all. I was called to a meeting once and said, "Ron, there's a bunch of candles in a room." There was a women's ministry, ladies, nothing against the women's ministry, I love them. But there must have been 100 candles in this room. They're putting off so much heat I got warm when I walked in. But the lights were off and all these candles, and so I quickly had them blow them all off. Electrical boxes, elevator rooms. There's an elevator in this building, as we were told. There should be an elevator room where the equipment is. Nothing is allowed to be stored by fire rules in that room. And if I was in that school I told you about the other day, walked into their storage room, and they had all the electrical panels, and everything was stored all around them. The rule is 36 inches away from the electrical panels. Okay. Some little simple rules that the fire marshal will love you for, and keep your building safe. Smoke detectors, sprinkler systems, if you have them, they need maintenance at least once a year, and you got to have somebody to do them. If you have this building is sprinkled, so there's a few things they need to do. They need to have it inspected every year by a sprinkler company. They have what they call a riser in this building. It's a big red pipe where the water comes in, where the fire department really wants to go to in case of a fire. They want to know where the riser is, because that fills these sprinkler heads with water. And so that needs to be inspected every year. If you have a kitchen, and you got a kitchen hood, they got to be cleaned and inspected every year, at least once a year. Playground equipment. I've been to playground equipments. Not many now, but they still have lumber and boards. They really got to get rid of them because the kids get hurt on them. Everybody's going to plastic, PVC. That's great. Make sure you have the ground that's meets the federal code and it's soft. So just be careful about that. I was at a church recently. I don't have the picture here. I don't believe it. It's coming up. And my wife was doing a Bible study at this church, and I walked to the back door, and they have a beautiful playground. Everything's beautiful. But their air conditioning condensers are right next to the door, the gate that goes into the playground. So my suggestion is to kind of put a fence around it or something for the kids. And extension cords, fire marshals, again, don't like them. You can use them temporarily, but you can't use them permanently. And space heaters, depending on your fire marshal, find out what they want. Some like them, some don't. Any questions about that, Everett? You're going to be so quiet. We'll be done in half an hour. We can't do that. Medical team. How many of you have any medical teams in your church? Anybody? Okay. Medical teams are interesting because you can use a doctor, nurse, EMT, paramedic on a medical team. You don't have to pay them. And they fall under the Good Samaritan law in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, in Indiana, Ohio, in Tennessee. Basically, they can volunteer as long as they leave the drugs in the car in the hospital. They can't bring anything in with them. You can pay for an EMT or a nurse or whatever, part-time, hourly, just to be there for large events. But most people will work as a volunteer. They want to give back something to the church, and that's where you tap them on the shoulder and you said, "God just tapped you on the shoulder. I need you to volunteer." So, and a lot of them will do that out of the goodness of their heart. And it's really important. They should be easily identified. Put a little name tag. You don't have to wear a jumpsuit that says medical or safety team. I think a little name tag's good. And I like it because it prevents every nurse and doctor jumping up during an emergency and coming. We had an emergency where someone was having a heart attack, we felt. So our medical team responded. A young lady showed up, she says, I'm a doctor, I can take care of this. So they stepped back, they let her take care of it, got the patient to the room, EMS called, everything was fine. Afterwards, our nurse coordinator asked her, so where are you practicing? She goes, well, I'm still in med school. That's a big no-no. So our medical team eventually just had name tags. If somebody shows up, they say, oh, we got it. Thank you very much. Because we don't know who they are. Have response protocols in place. Large churches. This church is getting at that size in the sanctuary. If something happens, you can basically, the medical team can go to that person, kind of escort them out and take care of them outside the sanctuary, unless, of course, they're passed out or something. And a lot of churches just continue to worship. Most churches do not seat 1,000 people or more. So what happens is you're going to have to stop the service. So if the pastor's preaching and the pastor says, everybody stand up, we're going to have a prayer, we just had a little medical problem, we'd like somebody to take care of that, our team's taking care of it. Or if it goes longer, have the worship guy come and play a song. But have everybody stand up so they don't see what's going on. I think that's good. Provide a first aid room or space. If you don't have one, a bathroom does well. Tile floor, water, it's cool. If somebody gets sick, it's a good place to get sick rather than on your carpet. You know, just a nice place that you can. And here's room supplies. This is something that I would highly recommend if you're putting a team together. And you can do this legally. You can have a commercial size first aid kit, which is a big one. It costs you $130, $140 from a Cintas or somebody like that. Blood pressure cuff and stethoscope. Oxygen. You need a doctor's prescription for that. One of your doctors in your congregation gets you for that. An AED. Highly recommend an AED. And a wheelchair stretcher. The AED, you can buy them now. They're running about $1,000 or $1,100. If you pay more for that, don't buy it. It's too expensive. But you can get them for about $1,000. And you can get training with it for free, depending who you buy it from. American Red Cross and people like that will throw in training for free. I think that's highly important. And most places need an AED now. It's saving lives. And that's your commercial kit, if you can kind of see it. It's big on the wall. It comes fully stocked. It has, aspirin and self-serve containers like that. One of the things that we did, we put these all over our campus at Southeast, and I was spending $1,000 a month restocking them because our staff was using them. Any questions about that? Medical team? Okay. We'll get to the shootings. Some child safety. This is a big deal. And it's a big deal. I do a special seminar for this. It's almost 2 hours long. I'm going to give you some tips about child safety. I think are really important. Let me give you a statistic from the CDC. This is not made up. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys by the time they're 18 is sexually abused. 1 in 4, 1 in 6. And that number is what they gather. I'm assuming that it's probably worse than what we see. By the time a pedophile or a sexual offender is arrested, a male sexual offender, he has abused at least 150 children by the time he's arrested. You know, sometimes they say, well, he's just arrested for 2 or 3. He's already abused 130, 140 already that we don't know about. Children don't report this stuff. Sometimes they never report it. I did a class. We had a Bible at Beach thing. We had 1,000 high schoolers go to Daytona every year. So I teach a class before we go to all the adults and volunteers that go. And part of that deal is I talk about child sexual abuse prevention. And one of the things I talk about is just what I'm telling you now. And what happens is, when I teach this class, we have to take a break afterward. I have a male and a female counselor from the counseling center in the back of the room. Because when I start talking about it, people start crying in the room. They've never told anybody about this. This is the first time they get told about this. So we take a break, a 15-20 minute break, and the counselors get busy for a little bit. I'm talking to some of these adults who never told anybody they were abused. And they feel it's a safe place, church, so they start doing that. So it's unbelievable. 1 in 4, 1 in 6. some basic child safety things. Staff and volunteer training include first aid, AED, and CPR training. If you're a larger church, if you're 500 or more church membership, you probably should have somebody as a volunteer or staff become a trainer. It doesn't cost much. You just need to take an additional test after they go through training. And then they can do the training for a much reduced cost. I'd highly recommend that. Educate parents about what your procedures are. You know, what your safety and security issues for their kids are. Let the parents know. By the way, you know, they should be volunteering with the kids too if they're capable. So you want to educate them. How do you keep track of a child? I spoke to a group of churches. I'm not going to tell you where or what congregation, but I spoke to a group of churches, and one of the things we talked very briefly about was the child sexual abuse prevention area. And this one church watches kids, but they have no system, no tag system, no check-in system, no check-out system. So my question to the lady that ran the child area was, so if I'm CPS, Child Protective Services, or I'm a local detective coming in, and I've got a sexual abuse case that has been reported about this child, and they're telling me the whereabouts of the child, and I come in and I say, was Mary Smith here the last weekend of January? That church could not tell me. In fact, if there was an emergency and they took the kids out there, they wouldn't know what was missing. Just a simple sign-in sheet. The tag system works really well. You know, you give the tag to stick it on the back of the kid, the parent gets a tag. Simple system. You don't have to have a fancy computer system. A lot of churches do. And by the way, don't use the same number. Pedophiles watch for the same number so you can track a kid every week. And I'm with, again, Senior Minister Bob Russell, right, years ago. We go to pick up his grandson in our children's area, and we walk in, and volunteers are across the counter. He says, hey, how you doing, Pastor? How you doing? And he knows who I am because I do training for them. And Bob says, I'm here to pick up Charlie, my grandson. And the guy looks at me, and he says, fine. Bob, you have your tag to pick up Charlie. Well, his wife Judy had the tag. And Bob says, no, I don't need the tag. Just give me Charlie. You know who I am. And now the volunteer looks at me, right? I trained them not to give the child out without a tag. So needless to say, I had to go find Judy and get the tag. So really important.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
And would you do that even if you know every child in the church in that group?
Yeah.
If you have a system in place, then you need to abide by that system.
Yeah, and the reason is that you may have a new volunteer. You may have my daughter show up to visit your church. No one knows who they are. It just makes sense so people see that you have that in place. And as your church grows, and hopefully that'll happen, then the system's already in place. When we did background checks for all of our volunteers, one of the things we did years ago, there were volunteers that had worked in the children's ministry for 30 years. Some of them were 67, 80 years old. And how do you tell them, I need reference checks and all this stuff? So the first call I got was from an 81-year-old lady who's been working with for 30-some-odd years, Miss Jane, we'll call her. And she said, Rob, why do I have to do this? And I said, Miss Jane, because you're going to set the example. Because if you do it, I can tell everybody you did, and everyone will. And you know what she did?
If you've got a small group, say 5 or 6 kids, then most of them we know will be.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, you'll get to the point where you're going to say, okay, we're going to start putting the tags on the kids in there. So.
We've done that one time. We had, I think, about 25 kids kind of did it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, whatever you have, I'm not telling you to change the culture of your church. I'm just saying you'll feel it when you need to do it.
I think it's especially important when you have a new family come in. That's something to look for, especially you know, a couple with a kid.
Right.
If they come in, they see that your nursery, your children's room doesn't have something like that, they're not going to come back.
The millennials, and I call them millennials, my daughter's one. When she goes to a new church, she's looking for that. You know, she calls me Captain Safety. Captain Safety said, I need to ask you a question. Do you do background checks? You know, do you have tags for the kids? So, yeah, the new people will do that. And you're correct. You're absolutely correct.
How expensive is it to do background checks?
The Baptist, Lifeway Baptist has a company that you can do. I'm going to recommend two companies besides them. One is a company called Track One, TRAK-1, the numeral one. They're a large company. I've used them for almost 14 years when I was with Southeast. And the other one is Protect My Ministry. They throw a lot of stuff in there. You're going to ask me cost. I can't tell you that because they base on the number of checks that you sent in. We sent, to give you an idea, Southeast, I had a full-time person do this, and she sent between 4,000 and 5,000 requests a year.
Wow.
So, because we had 7,000 to 8,000 cleared volunteers. Now, it's probably going to cost you between 10 and 12 or 14 bucks a check. They do a national, you want a national background check, and you want a national sex offender check, not just 121 counties in Kentucky. People move around. So you want to do that. Track One and Protect My Ministry will do both. And the company with the Baptists also will do that through Lifeway. And they'll tell you how to do it. It's online, instantaneous. They'll even give you the forms if you need to. Before you leave here, grab one of my cards. You can email me, and I'll send you a form online that I think is a good form if you want to use it, that we use at Southeast. It's been all vetted by the attorneys and everything else. But there's a form. You got to use it. You got to at least three reference checks, I would say, get. Adults, you know, that are a family member, maybe an employer, and somebody in the church, reference checks. And when you get the background checks, it's very easy. You put your name, social security number, and date of birth. Enter it. Within a minute, it pops back up. It's all computerized.
So you're saying you're doing a background and a sex offender?
Two different? It does it all at once for you. These companies will do both of them identically at the same time.
What do they do background checks, but I don't know who they use.
Yeah, make sure they do a national background check and a national sex offender registry check.
But if they use either one of them two, you mentioned they would do both.
They would do both. Anything else about that? Now, that's just one part of clearing a volunteer, and we'll talk about that. Plan for a missing child. You should have a plan in place for a missing child, how that occurs, what doors are watched, where do you look. Most of the time, the kids are hiding in a closet, in the room, you know, and you'll find them within 2 or 3 minutes. So, you'll be fine, I think, but quickly expand that and quickly involve the doors to stop people from going out until you find the child. I think that's really, really important in today's society. Adult awareness, all of your volunteers should have a heightened sense of awareness when they volunteer, just watching and observing. They should be watching people coming in and out. If somebody walks down the hall when service is in and it's an adult, you know, it's okay to walk up and say, "Hi, my name's Ron. Can I help you?" It's okay to do that. If he's a bad guy, he's going to leave. He's not going to tell you who he is. But if it's somebody just looking, make sure you talk to them. I think it's important. We talked about the authorized drop-off and pick-up. Now, here's some... We talked about background checks, reference checks, personal interviews important, sexual abuse prevention training, I think, is important. There's a company called Ministry Safe. You can go online and pull them up, ministrysafe.com. A guy by the name of Greg Love is an attorney, and his wife, Kim, they're both attorneys. I think they're the best in the country. They do training. This is what, now, I can do training for you too. I can come in, I'm local, I can do an hour and a half, 2 hour training. These guys, this is what they do. For a fee, and I think it's about $250 a year, you become a member of their organization, you assign somebody in your church to be the administrator, and as the volunteers come in and say, okay, you're going to be a child volunteer, you're cleared, you've done everything else, now I want you to go to Ministry Safe. He'll be given a password, he'll go online to their website and watch an hour-long training video on child sexual abuse prevention. It's some of the best in the country, period. And I know Greg and his wife, and I've seen the training, I've been to the training, done all of that, and it's some of the best in the country. Every time a volunteer does it, they charge you a small fee. I don't know what it is, $5, $7, whatever it is. When the volunteer finishes the hour-long training, they take a 25-question quiz. Simple. As long as you watch it, you'll pass. As soon as you pass, the church gets an emailed copy of your certificate. You get a copy of your certificate. Remember we talked about our insurance agent friend? They love that. It's a big deal. to go through this training, sexual abuse prevention for children. Ministry Safe is one of the best in the country. Oversight of a volunteer. Make sure that the volunteer at least 2 or 3 weekends has he shadowed somebody or she shadowed somebody before you let them work. Kind of hard to see. The security cameras on the left and the doors on the right. I don't like solid doors. The doors with the windows, like in this classroom, is a good example of what I like. You can see in. Make sure you do that. I love security cameras. Even if you have a small system, I think it's important. There's a church in the Midwest, a very, very, very large church. Had a young man abuse 2 children on a Sunday morning during worship in the children's area. He was the son of a volunteer. You see, you got to be careful about who you let in there, right? He's not cleared, but he was put in there and he abused 2 children. During the civil proceedings, because guess what? Even though they're members of the church, they're going to sue the church. You've ruined my kid's life, which is really sad. Anyway, they sued the church. During the deposition, if you've ever been in a deposition, the attorneys sit around the room here to record you, and you raise your right hand, and you ask every question, and no question is out of bounds. They did research, and they found out that this church had a manual 2 inches thick for safety and security, and part of that was the child sexual abuse prevention and training and all of that. Well, over the years, they kind of laxed, and they dropped. No one has been going through the training. Big deal. Big deal. Also, they asked them security question, right? This is a church of 500,000 square feet in a building. They asked them, how many security cameras do you have? They said 11. Where are they? They're in the administrative office. Do you have any in the children's area? No, I don't. The check was for $39 million. The same thing happened in Tennessee about 2 or 3 years ago, almost identical. The check there was $32 million. And what happens is an insurance company will not cover you once that happens. Then it's tithes and offerings. $1 goes every time you have a problem. See how big deal this is? So that church went out and got security cameras and placed cameras in every classroom where the children are. Many churches are doing that now. And you say, well, it's privacy. No, it's not a privacy. You can put one in this classroom. Just don't put them in the bathroom. But every children's area, if you're going to expand, you know, on your wish list, okay, Lord, here's some things, you know, we need. I need security cameras in all the children's classrooms. It also protects the teachers from any false accusations. What do you do when a registered sex offender wants to attend your church? You're going to have to deal with this on a church-by-church basis, maybe a group basis, region basis, whatever. This is what I recommend. Some churches actually say no sex offenders are allowed in the church. I don't want to face the Lord when I and tell him someone is not allowed in our church. He died for all of our sins, not some of our sins. So this is what I recommend. If you're going to allow a sex offender in your church, you got to set some rules up. First, you got to interview. You got to have a pastor. Maybe a former law enforcement guy sit in the interview. The number one question you got to ask is, who is your parole probation officer and what is he or her phone number? Because you need to call them and let them know this guy, and I see a guy because 90-95% of sex offenders are guys, wants to come to our church. Sometimes after they're released from prison for a year, they're not allowed to go to any church or school. And if they're lying to you, you don't want any part of it. You say, you know what, you go worship, you go somewhere else. Once you catch him in a lie, he's got to go somewhere else. The thing about sex offenders is, the repeat rate is some of the highest you get into. They just cannot get away from this stuff. Even after they find the Lord. So, have that interview. Call it for parole probation officer. If everything checks out, and they say he can come, then assign a mature Christian with it as a shadow mentor. Call him whatever you want to do. But every time he comes to church, he calls his mentor, meets him in the parking lot. That mentor stays on campus with him wherever he goes. He's not allowed in any children's area. He can go to service, and he can go in an adult Bible fellowship class or adult Bible school or whatever. That's okay. But no children. That's sort of the parameters. And he's got to agree to that. If you find him on campus without his mentor, he's up. He's gone. Now, what do you do with a guy who's married? or it's a girlfriend with kids. Well, the wife or girlfriend take the kids, right? When he worships, the mentor, you know, it don't have to be the Secret Service on top of him. He can sit a couple rows back and let them come to worship. Any questions about that? It's the general parameters that I would suggest. It's a biggie. Sometimes they'll come to you and tell you they're a sex offender and they come into your church. Other times you'll find them. And when you do, then you got to go, whoa, why didn't you come to me? I need to call your parole probation officer. Yes, sir.
What do you do like in a small church where you have some of the, like for example, Moise and I, we end up feeding a lot of individuals.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of overlap. Mm. And we're trying to strategically put people in place to monitor everything and any code and everything else. But yet the reality is that there's still some overlap. And it's kind of hard to keep just children contained in one area for that time frame.
Yeah, it's you got to work at it. And I'm going to say that these guys all know that you're going to set parameters.
Yeah.
So I'd set some parameters and some guidelines and say, you know what, you're not allowed to leave this room between this hour and this hour. If you go to the bathroom, I'm going to send somebody with you.
Okay.
So I think you really got to, you got to somehow stop that. Your kids can't be intermingled with them. At Southeast, we had a group like that, and we shoved them, wrong word, we placed them way in a corner of the building, and they were told they needed to be there because we had kids in the other part of the building.
Okay.
And if they violated that, they were kicked out of the group and off campus.
Okay.
It's a very stringent rule because these guys are repeat offenders like you wouldn't believe. Any other questions about that? We're getting to the guns, folks, I promise.
I do have a question. Is there a certain number of adults that should be per child?
This is what I recommend. The Kentucky family something in the government. You go to Kentucky.gov and you pull up the family services, and there's a daycare center recommended adult child ratio number for all ages 0 to 17, 364 days. By the way, if you're 17, if you got a kid or grandson who's 17 years old, 6'5", plays linebacker at your local high school, you know what? He's still considered a child by the government and the courts. So he's a child. So you treat him with that. So the child adult ratios can be found for daycare centers. I say that's got to be your minimum standard. A lot of churches do better than that, especially in the older ages. They got 1 in 30 or something, so we put 2 in 30. But check there first, and then make that your minimum standard, and then build upon that. Good question. Security planning, form a committee or team. If you don't have one, get 2 or 3 people together and start something. Leadership is important. The support of the leadership is important because security has to be balanced between security and ministry. You don't put up metal detectors yet in churches, right? You want people to come. So there's got to be a balance. How do you balance it? The elders, deacons, or leadership of your church will tell you. Now, you got to come in and say, I want to protect people, so I'm going to put some things in place. Because pastors, by nature and by heart, are pastoral. So a lot of times we have to have a conversation about things, because as much as I love people and I love to pastor to people, I'm always erring the side of caution for safety and security. Sometimes I overstep what the pastor may want me to do, but then I got to explain why. So there's a balance, and you got to usually talk to your pastor about that. Consult with your insurance agent. I already told you that, right? Tell them everything that you're doing with this. And if you have an attorney or someone that advises the church, also let them know what you're doing. Get a security team together. One of the groups that people forget about in the United States are our retired law enforcement, retired cops. The federal government has a law that says they can carry a gun anywhere. They fall under the jurisdiction of a special federal law if they comply with their local police department. They get training there once a year, they go through shooting once a year, get certified, and they can carry the gun anywhere, almost anywhere. And these are retired policemen. They're a great resource if you're not able to hire an off-duty officer. I really believe the best practice is to hire an off-duty officer. I worked with a church of 100 recently, and they're very concerned. So they're actually taking part of their tithes and offering, paying $30 an hour to have a uniform officer there on Sunday morning with his car. And they feel that's so important in today's climate that they're doing that. If you can't afford it, find a current or former law enforcement, military specialized. Specialized meaning not, you know, just not the normal army or guy that carries his gun. Because you got to have tactical training in shooting. Do background check, designate a team leader. Armed versus unarmed. That's going to be a call that you're going to have to make. Now, first of all, does your church allow guns in the church? Concealed carry, open carry. Here's the deal about churches. You're sitting in a church right now, and this church is on private property. Correct? The government doesn't own this property. Mm-hmm. Doesn't own your church either, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. So you take that into mind. It's just like your home. If he comes into, he's a friend of mine, he comes into my house, oh, he's forgot to take his gun off, he's wearing a gun on his hip, I say, hey, John, put the gun in the car. I got kids in the house. If he refuses, I can say, John, leave my property. If he refuses, police are called, he's arrested for trespass. That's the way you handle it in the church. So if you got a guy, if you don't allow any guns on your church property, and the guy's carrying concealed or open, you tell him, listen, we don't allow any guns on the church property, please put it in your car, and if he refuses, the police can arrest him for trespassing because you end up picking him off the property. That's the way you get it. Okay? It's private property. I've had a guy actually carrying open with a 45, a big gun, and when I talked to him, he pulled the second, he literally had the Second Amendment of the Constitution in his pocket. And I looked at him, smiled, and said, great, man, this is private property. That piece of paper does not allow you to carry on my property. Put the gun in the car. So, same with open carry. Now, what do you do with your team? If you're not using police officers, you're using these guys, I would suggest only a few people carry, not everybody, because they'll end up shooting each other in church service. I tell you, it happens. So, and get them trained. Find a shooting instructor with a law enforcement agency that can train them. Because I'll tell you what, I carried a gun, and I still have a gun, carried a gun for years and years on my hip. I pulled my gun twice as a police officer. I was shot at once. Fortunately, I never shot anyone. Here's the deal. When police officers are trained that is the last thing you do. Mm-hmm. Because when I press that trigger, I can't call that mm-hmm. bullet back. I can't. And here's the deal. Bad guy, good guy, lady, child, whatever. You've now hurt or killed somebody who's a family member of someone. You're in trouble. So be prepared. If you allow somebody to carry a gun, they need to know that. Concealed carry permit, state of Kentucky. I go to class for about 6 hours. At the end of class, they give me 20 bullets. I walk up to a target 21 feet away. I shoot it. With my eyes closed, I hit it 11 times, I pass. Pretty cool. Do you want that person carrying a gun in your church? Is that a responsibility? So be careful. Indiana. Here's Indiana. I go get my fingerprints done, turn that into the local PD, or state trooper's office. I go online, fill the form out, send a payment, they send me my card. I don't have to shoot a gun. I don't go to class. That's Indiana. So some states are that way, so just be careful. Train. Your ushers, greeters, are your frontline security people. They see people coming in that door every week, and if somebody's new, hi, how are you? My name is Ron. Welcome to Eastside or wherever. If he's a bad guy, he's not going to let you know. Now he's been identified. That'll help the problem. You may not have a problem just by doing that. And your ushers and greeters need to be told, if something is wrong, if they feel something is wrong, people call it the sixth sense, I call it the Holy Spirit, and something inside you feels something is wrong when you meet somebody or see something, tell your safety team, tell your security team, let them go meet them. Because you never know. I can tell you story upon story, case upon case, exactly that happened where someone was injured or killed, and the usher now says, I wish I would have told somebody because I felt something was wrong with the guy.
Did you identify yourself as a safety team or just go
I go up and say, hi, my name's Ron with Southeast. Welcome. What's your name?
Just get to feel it.
Find out who he is. Yeah. And then I go from there, depending, you know. Uniform off-duty officers, we cover that, plain clothes off-duty. You know, the larger churches pay for these guys to come in, and if you got volunteers, you got people that are law enforcement currently in your area that belong to your church, God's tap you on the shoulder, I need you on the team. You know, it's okay to do that. These guys want to volunteer. They work odd hours. It's a great place for them to volunteer, at least to help the church out. Building security before, between, after. Somebody, your ushers or greeters, somebody should be checking, at least picking up trash and stuff in your sanctuary, making it look pretty and clean. You have more than one service, after, between services, walking through. If there's anything that looks odd, tell somebody. You know, we used to get calls from our ushers about bags and stuff left in closets. And I'd walk up to an usher and he'd grab the bag and go, here you go. Well, it's too late. It was a bomb. We'd all die. So, you know, don't shake the thing. But, you know, just call. Late night building checks. A lot of our churches are in rural areas. Drive around the building location. Make friends with your local PD. You know, when I was a cop, churches were a great place for me to be on Sunday because most of the community was there. So I drive through churches. Conduct a risk assessment. People, property, money are your three most important things, right? Make sure the people are safe. Make sure your property's safe. You got well-lit areas. You know, the shrubs are cut up. You can see the church. You got motion sensor lights, things of that nature. And I'm going to talk briefly about money. Money needs to get to the bank safely. The days of having Aunt Jane and her husband take the money home on Sunday night and go to the bank, that's probably gone. Hundreds of cases of embezzlement. Some people, that's a weak point for them. Money's a weak point. So be careful how you handle the money. Make sure it gets to the bank safely. In safes, I was in a church. They were really proud of the way they handled their money. It's a mega church. I walked in and saw their safe. Their safe was probably 50 years old. It's like, dude. And it wasn't even a drop safe. You need a drop safe where people can drop money. Only accounting people or your staff can get into the safe. Meet with your fire marshal, police representative. A lot of communities have CROs or even the deputy sheriffs or the state police. Let them come and check your building out. Free stuff, man. EMS, they love to, this building here, EMS would love to be in because it's kind of a hodgepodge, old, new, and upstairs, downstairs. And somebody in your church needs to be able to talk to the media. Sometimes it's not the pastor. Because, again, we'll go back to the pastor's heart as being pastoral. In case of a problem, he may get emotional and say too much stuff on the on camera. Quickly, some stuff that I have encountered. This is my stuff. Someone is passing out flyers in your parking lot. What did we say your parking lot is?
Private property.
Private property. Ask them to leave. They can go on the sidewalk if they want. They can't block traffic. They can't block pedestrian traffic. But you can ask them to leave. Man on the sidewalk is yelling at members. Is that public or private property? Sidewalk's public. He can yell. Start using profanity and stuff. Call the police. A person enters the church asking for money or food. A lot of this is happening. You guys should have some procedures in place on how to handle this. Especially on the weekends when you have service. They may end up disrupting your service. A lady stands during service and yells that she had an inappropriate relationship with the pastor. It happened in our church. Got to be prepared. What do you do? Take her out. She's got some mental problems. During service, two people stand, unfurl a protest banner. Again, what kind of property is this?
Private.
Ask them to leave. This happened in Texas, and the reason I have this up here is because this lady was giving a aerobics class, a physical class, at early in the morning. She showed up around 4:30 in the morning. The security cameras caught the guy or lady that killed her in a police uniform walking around. Anyways, she showed up by herself at 4:30 in the morning, like she normally does. This person confronted and killed her. So, you know, if you have somebody coming to the property at that early in the morning, don't. Have somebody with them. So they've never caught this person. Active shooter. There are two types of training going around right now around the country. One is the ALICE training method. This is being done in most schools. It's an acronym for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate. If you're a school teacher, or someone who's involved in the school system, this is probably what they're being taught. I like it, and then I don't. The older I get, that's a lot of stuff for me to remember. Okay, what is L? What is I? C? Okay, the guys with the gun out there, what do I do? So it kind of gets a little confusing, and I'm going to show you a simpler method. But I want you to be familiar with this, because this is what they're teaching out there. I went to a training as an observer of an ALICE in a school, and the guy with the gun fired around after the teachers were all being trained for about an hour. They were really focusing on lockdown, because that's what teachers are taught, lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. So he was out in the hallway, I was out there with him, he fired a couple rounds. What do the teachers do? Well, they rush the door, they lock the door, turn the lights off, hide in the corner. So when the exercise is over, I looked at him and I said, okay, you taught them lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. But did you notice that there's a door on the other side of the classroom? There's two doors. They could have gone out, down the stairwell, and out the building. Why are they locking down? The shooter's right there. Run away. So it's a whole mindset. So where it says evacuate on the bottom, that's probably your first thing you're going to do. But I wanted you to see that. This is what I like. Run, hide, fight. Simple. It's the same thing, but it's three words, right? First thing you do is run. You got to get out of it. Now, when you respond to an active shooter, you're going to evacuate. The second thing is, if you cannot evacuate, you're going to hide out. Third thing is to take action as appropriate if he's on top of you, and call 911. Make sure somebody calls 911. You'd be surprised. I've been in many situations where I'm 2 and 3 minutes into whatever we're doing, and I look around, and everybody's just like, anybody call 911? No, look what I say. Call 911. Somebody's got to call 911. So the first things first, run, get out. Leave your belongings. Don't wait for others. Call 911 when you get out. Right? Number two, hide. Hide out. If you must hide, hide in the area of the shooter's view. Lock and block entry into your hiding place. Silence your cell phone. Remain quiet. Hopefully the shooter will pass you by. And the third, we train in all facets. When I train volunteers and everybody gets to this point, what do? I said, if the shooter's within arm's reach or within your area, you know, like my world, I got to defend myself. How do I defend myself? Well, the rules are out. I don't care how you defend yourself. Mm-hmm. You got to stop him from hurting me or anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, you bite, got to do whatever you have to do. Mm-hmm. You know, stop him. That's important. Your life depends on it. I've been involved as a cop on the ground fighting people much bigger than I am. You can see I'm not a very big guy. The Lord really watched over me before I was a believer. But I can tell you, the adrenaline starts going. You get to a point where you got to defend yourself. And I carried a gun. That's the first thing people want is a gun as I'm fighting them. Let me tell you, I took everything I could to not give them the gun. Okay, some case studies of active shooters. We've got a few minutes left. YWAM Training Center are in Colorado, New Life Christian Church, Colorado. These made the national news. He killed two people at Youth with a Mission. And then the next morning he shows up at New Life Christian Church, kills two girls in the parking lot, comes in with his rifle, starts shooting, doesn't hurt anybody. He sees a bunch of high school students running down a hallway off the side of the building. So he goes after them. They're going to go out. They're running away from him, which is great, but he's chasing them. A lady who is part of their security team, a former police officer from Minnesota, decided to work on the team that morning. She wasn't supposed to, but she knew of the shooting the night before and the connection that YWAM had with New Life Christian. So she showed up. She chases him. And the reason I know this is happening is because I talked to a guy who was hiding behind one of the posts on that hallway. So he tells me she comes around the corner as he's running, and she yells at him. He turns around. They engage in gunfire. She hits him a couple times. He falls, takes his pistol out of his waistband, and kills himself. Now, if you read her story, she's written a book. It may not jive, but I'm telling you what the guy told me who was standing in the hallway. But it just shows that you got to be careful. Now, when I look at this case, and we do case studies, when I look at this case, what can I learn from it? Well, we knew that there were a shooting, two people died the night before. We have a connection with YWAM. Great, we had additional people. Did we have anybody in the parking lot? No. When the guy drives on the property, where does he go? He's coming on my parking lot. So even if I had volunteers that were parking cars with a radio or some way to communicate, they could have at least said, I got a guy with a gun getting out of a car. Something. So you got to have somebody. And maybe it's a greeter type situation, but they're also eyes and ears for their safety team. First Baptist Church in Maryville, Illinois. The pastor, who's got connections in Louisville, he attended seminary there for a while. He was preaching. Again, I talked to the security guy who was in charge of that church that morning. The pastor was preaching at what they call the graveyard services, right? For us guys, for us people. Early in the morning, got the early morning service. Seats over 1,000, but only 200 people show up early morning. So he's in there preaching to them. So the security guy looks in. Everything's cool. He's got three security people, him and two others. They're having coffee. The other two are having coffee. He leaves. He's going to tell his wife about a tornado watch in the area. She's running the children's area. So no one is at the front door of the church. No one is in the narthex or open area, gathering area. And no security person is in the sanctuary. So this guy walks in. Young guy walks in. He walks all the way down front and starts talking to the pastor during preaching. There are two deacons sitting on each side. No one moves. No one hears the conversation. Pastor gets down. When he gets down, says a few words, the guy pulls a .45 semi-automatic, fires a bullet. First bullet hits the Bible, blows the Bible up into a million pieces. What does everybody think? Wow, we're going to have a great sermon today, man. What a good illustration. Second bullet hits the pastor in the heart. He falls and dies. Then everybody jumps on the guy. My security buddy says, I hear what sounds like balloons popping a couple of times. I don't have any balloons in the building. As he's walking and gets close to the sanctuary, a lot of screaming going on, and then all this takes place. The lesson, a lot of small churches. I was on TV recently after the shooting in Texas, and he asked me a question. What do you recommend small churches do? Because this guy came in through the front door. I said, lock the door. Once service starts, lock the door. Put an usher or greeter on the inside of the door. Somebody who's a late arrival, open the door, say, hi, welcome, thank you for coming. Shut the door. That would prevent this guy from coming in. Secondly, the gray-haired service, somebody's got to be watching them too, right? Doesn't matter. Here's another one in Wichita, Kansas. This guy, Dr. Tiller, was an abortionist, and Scott Roeder wanted to kill him. So he blew his car up one day, missed killing him at the abortion clinic. So what does the doctor do? He hires 24-hour security. But he's a member of this church. He's a volunteer. What do they allow him to do? Hand out bulletins at the front door on Sunday. What does his bodyguard do during that time? Get a cup of coffee. What does Scott Roeder do at that time? Walks up to him, shoots and kills him at the front steps of the church. Again, you walk through this thing, and as I talk to large churches, this is an issue. What do you do with these high-profile people? And you get the governor coming to your church. He shouldn't be handing out bulletins at the front door. You know, I mean, you just can't because they've got a lot of enemies. So just be thinking that through.
Let me ask you a question on the locking the doors. We've had this discussion with our church. We've got a lot of doors, but we don't have cameras. I mean, you can have somebody at every door.
It's a cultural thing. What's your first name?
Darryl.
Darryl. It becomes a cultural thing. I think churches have to eventually get to the point where the congregation knows there's one entrance or two entrances. Mm-hmm. Once church service starts, they know that door's going to be locked. They've got to come in through the door. Mm-hmm. I think it's just church has got to understand as part of the safety for everybody. And we talked about the 81-year-old, but she's the example. I'm going to tell my church congregation, you're the example so we can grow, so we can be a safe place for our people. The Texas one where the guy came in, he came in through the front door shooting. Killed 26 people. So, yeah, you got to get to a point. How can I be a church and minister at the same token, protect my people? Let them all come in, not a problem. The main door, you have an usher agreement. Maybe it's the second door in the back of an usher agreement.
If you'll notice on our doors and here, you'll see a sign on the back doors, the side doors, mm-hmm. after 11
right.
or 10:45, you come to right. the front street doors to right. get in because we lock everything down.
It's great. It's good. Yeah, I saw the signs on the computer. It's good. Good for, thanks for pointing that out. Antioch, Tennessee, this guy came in, just sanctuary and started shooting. He got a scuffle with the guy. The guy took the gun, held him down, got his gun, came and held him until the police got there. By the way, there was a shooting on February 14th, the same day that the 17 kids were killed in Florida. The same day, the reason it didn't make the news was there was this guy came into a church to rob all the people sitting in the church. He had a gun. He was subdued in the kitchen area. The police were called, of course, right? Somebody called 911. So a cop came in the back door of the kitchen, and he finds a guy on the ground and a guy with a gun in his hand. Cops don't know good and bad. They don't know who the good guy and bad guy is. So the cop, this is what you read, I don't know how the story is, apparently was yelling at him to drop the gun. The guy says, I didn't want to drop the gun because I was afraid it was going to go off. Most guns today, you can throw them against the wall, they won't go off. So anyways, he was afraid to drop the gun, so he didn't. The cop shot him twice. He survived. But that gives you an example about, be careful about guns in churches. Police cannot differentiate good and bad guys. And here's the one in Texas, killed 26, injured 20. He started shooting at the church as he was walking up to it from across the street. Door was open, he came in and shot and killed a lot of people. This here, if you look at it, he was a problem for this church weeks and weeks before because of a domestic situation with his family. You know, you got to tell somebody. Tell the local PD. The 17 kids that were killed in Parkland, Florida, apparently this guy was, the police had visited him many times. I don't know what the deal is there. Again, we'll find out the truth later. But you want the police to get familiar with the people. And all of a sudden, you start reading where a lot of kids are being arrested. Here in Kentucky, where they're making threats to schools that weren't before because people are telling people. Okay, we're ending. Here's some resources for you. Surviving an Active Shooter Event. That's the title of it, Run, Hide, Fight. If you go to the YouTube, just go to YouTube and put that in there, Houston PD. It's free. It's about a 5-minute video. It's a very good video. It talks about the run, hide, fight method in an office setting, building setting, but it gives you the procedure to go through. It's a really, really good video. The Center for Personal Protection and Safety. Here's a 21-minute video on church safety and security, and it's free on YouTube. They used to sell this thing for $600. They're friends of mine. Go to YouTube. Put ministry security video. It's the one that's 21:30 long, and it's very, very good. I would strongly suggest everybody sitting in this room probably needs to see that, and it's just a really fantastic video. Here is another resource.
Can you take that one back just a minute?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
I've written a book called Keeping Your Church Safe. You can go online and buy it at Amazon for about $14. If you go to the KBC thing in Frankfurt at the end of the month, I'll have a limited amount of them there for about $12. But you can get this online if you want it. I wrote it from an operational standpoint. As you notice the way I'm speaking, I'm very operational driven. That's my background in the police work. So I wrote this that way. If you don't have a program, if you've got a program, it's a really good book for you. People tell me that they love the book because it kind of spells everything out. It's got medical, it's got safety, it's got security, a bunch of stuff in here. But it's an easy read. It's about 140 pages. Like I said, Amazon.com or Zulon.com, whatever. You can get the book. And that's it there. And then I offer some training seminars if you need to get a hold of me. I've got business cards. Any questions? We're right at closing, so any questions?
Is there anybody you recommend for tactical training, like actual maybe live fire exercises or something like that?
I don't know anybody personally close by. There's a guy in Ohio that does it, but he kind of sticks in that area that I know. A lot of the, you got to be careful. A lot of the instructors don't want to do it for liability issues. But I'm finding some of them are beginning to do it because they're finding that they can make some extra money. And they just got to buy a little insurance policy that covers them. I check with local PD insurance departments are good ones to start with. Because they usually have an instructor on staff. There you go. You got somebody.
Let me ask you, then, should the leader in the church, did you know who's carrying a gun?
Yes.
Absolutely. And I know dozens of people in our church carry
guns. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
They might get a bunch of crossfire.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to know if you do, but you got to set some rules. Now, I'm not saying get up in the pulpit and say, by the way, no guns are allowed next week. I don't think you need to do that in Kentucky. But I think that if you have a policy in your church, whatever the policy is, if somebody sees a gun, somebody carrying a gun, then you can address it in the public. I think that's okay.
I'd be more concerned about the shooting.
Police don't like it either, because they can't tell the good guys. Any other questions? You guys are so quiet. That's all I have. You guys got
to,
yes, sir.
To answer his question, there is a company called Triple Countermeasure. And they are somewhat local. Where are they in Shelbyville or something?
Yeah.
We met with them a couple years ago, and they do active shooter training. They'll go through exercises with your team. They will actually write your security policy for you, but they are very expensive. So
I think one of their guys is going to be at Frankfurt.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for coming. Do you want to get started up there?